had found a vendor, his purchasing department had found a vendor that would ship him magnetic EI laminations at a lower price. And they didn't bother checking on what was the maximum magnetic field that those pieces of iron can tolerate. So there's a whole string of errors that occurred, and you go back further and further, and you find out that somebody found a cheaper source of iron and sold it for the same part, but it was supposedly a form, fit, and function replacement for the old one, and it wasn't. And the purchasing department had been excited by the fact that they had found a cheaper component to increase the profit on that particular product. Let me drop. So now you're seeing some of the steps. Let me drop until I get a beep. You're seeing some of the steps that go into a transformer. So everybody who learns a little bit about transformer thinks everything is the turns ratio. Mm-hmm. That's the third thing you consider downrange. The first thing is, does the primary winding all by itself, does it work without burning itself up? That's item number one. Item number two is the iron that you're using, one that can tolerate that peak magnetic field that you can calculate for that number of turns. If your particular iron happens to saturate, even though the inductance you calculate, everything is hunky-dory, and it saturates too soon, instead of using 1,000 turns on the primary, use 1,500 turns on the primary. You just take the number of turns on the primary, the number of turns on the secondary. As you increase the number of turns, the peak magnetic field you're requesting of the iron goes down in direct proportion. So, first thing is, does the primary work? Second thing, does the primary saturate the iron? Now you've really got a viable primary. And the third thing is, what's the turns ratio required to the secondary to give me the right voltage output or the right impedance ratio between primary and secondary? Now, when Wes first asked this question 2 or 3 weeks ago, which was the third question he asked during the first hour, he said, tell me, why do I have to have a certain number of turns? And I said, I'm not going to answer that now. That's not a brief question. We just spent 45 minutes giving a preliminary explanation for why. And you can, I mean, as I said earlier, it's a little bit like somebody saying, I got a couple minutes left, can you teach me how to do brain surgery? Well, transformer design, the number of people who sign into this TechNet who feel comfortable at doing that, I can count those people on two fingers.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
It's not rocket science. You could actually do those experiments that I just described, step by step, and build yourself a transformer. And if at worst, you burn up a piece of wire. It's not the end of the world. As long as the transformer is sitting on a metal pie tin, a metal cookie sheet, so to speak, with a piece of cloth underneath, to make sure that if it does go on fire, you're not going to burn up the bench. And you've got a fire extinguisher nearby, and you're wearing a pair of safety glasses. So you could learn an awful lot about building yourself a transformer. And I didn't feel competent to do that, and I was a second-year electrical engineering school student at a good school in New York City. And even when I graduated, I didn't feel comfortable at doing that. Now you see some of the ingredients. You guys probably got some questions or comments on all of the above. And the first time you hear all of this, it's not going to make a whole lot of sense. By way of the Mike Perry, KC2NJI website, www.amateurradio.tangovictor. When this recording appears there in a few days, you can play it back as many times as you want, and assuming I haven't made some huge errors, you'll get the point of what is transformer design like. Transformers are extremely useful. Let me drop. In the old days, every television set contained a power transformer. 120 volts on the primary, 12 volts for some of the filaments on the secondary, 6 volts for some of the filaments on the secondary, 150 volts for the main power supply, set of tap winding on that. Because the transformer itself is a little bit bulky, expensive, takes up some board space, with modern-day switching power supply techniques, we found ways of eliminating the transformer at a price. And in many cases, you've got a hot chassis when doing that, because the transformer simultaneously gave you some voltage isolation as far as grounding is concerned. And so depending on which way you plug the prongs into the wall and whether or not your house is wired correctly, a modern-day switching power supply with no power transformer, with a metal chassis, could have a hot chassis. The chassis is 120 volts above ground. You touch it and touch a water pipe, you could be in trouble. As such, the modern-day television set is very carefully designed in a plastic box with plastic knobs everywhere. And so, in theory, from the outside world, you can't touch the so-called grounded piece of metal inside that might not be, that's the main chassis, that might not be grounded. You have that vulnerability without the transformer. But the whole television set becomes cheaper with modern-day switching power supplies by eliminating that transformer. So you don't see transformers as often anymore. And hi-fi outputs and modulation transformers for AM transmitters and power supplies for televisions and computers. The computer, let me think now, are there transformers in any of our computer power supplies? I think the answer is almost no. Let me drop. There's one exception to that. A modern-day computer power supply takes the raw 120 volts AC, which is 120 volts RMS, which is 167 volts peak, rectifies that, so you've got 167 volts on a filter capacitor, that goes into a switching transistor, which feeds a toroid transformer in many cases. The toroid transformer and the switching transistors are running at 100 kc, 500 kc, with a certain primary to secondary winding. And by the way, that toroid transformer, that primary has to work by very similar techniques that I just described to you, except that now you're doing it at the 100 kc instead of 60 hertz, but you still got to obey the same laws. And so that toroid transformer's got a bunch of windings that give you the high voltage and low voltage outputs in some cases. Sometimes they do it with other techniques. So one way or another, there's going to be transformers. The IF can in your old-fashioned radio is something that's got a primary transformer winding and a secondary transformer winding. John was telling us about that earlier at 455 KC. That is a transformer running at 455 KC. The primary has got to work before the secondary works. The core that you plug into the primary has got to come up with the right inductance that resonates that primary. There's transformers all over the place. The way we teach transformer, let me drop that. The way we teach transformer engineering, the way we teach antenna engineering in our schools, from my point of view, leaves a lot to be desired. 90-some-odd% of all of those students with a high grade point average exiting those schools with a bachelor or master's degree and sometimes with a doctor's degree cannot design an antenna, cannot design a transformer. And these are two very useful components in the real world of electronics. You as ham radio operators have the opportunity, with the laboratories you set up in your basement, with simple voltmeters and oscilloscopes and whatever, you can make these measurements, you can do these tests, you can learn these things on your own. And when you do, no matter who you're working for in the electronic world, it's going to consider you more valuable. They're going to give you more job security, more money, treat you better, and so on. And you'll have a greater confidence when you describe what you've done to your fellow ham radio operators on the air. Hey, I just built a so-and-so and I wound my own transformer. I'm going to say, what? You tell most of the ham radio operators that you talk to that I designed and wound my own transformer for the piece of electronics that I just built. A good percent of them will look at you with awe. They'll treat you like you walk on water. Anybody got any further questions or comments on all of the above? Give me your call letters and name right now. KQRIW in the TechNet.
And to exchange.
Jar, I mean, West recognized, and out of anyone else who on the list? As you can tell, Wes, what you asked was a far from a simple question. There's a lot going on here. Into XJN, K2RIW. Go ahead, Wes.
Yeah, into XJN. Well, talking about a simple device, but extremely useful one. Thank you for mentioning the saturation, which is the state in which the core cannot accept any more magnetizing field age and cannot increase the magnetization of the material, so the total magnetic field B levels off. Let me drop. And there was really important to mention that the electromagnetic induction is based on the Faraday primary value of that is that we come simply to the point that the ideal transformer assumes that the old flux generated by the primary winding links and all the turns of every winding, including itself. And I'm coming to the question that I have, but for some people who simply do not understand what is the value of that lecture that Dick is giving us, well, you have everywhere transformers. Auto transformers, polyphase transformers, leakage transformers, audio transformers, instrument transformers, anything is transformers. And a simple garage needs a three-phase. And we're coming to the interesting point. We were touching that point a few times with John. But any time we start to talk, there was always some idiot, a complete flathead, flat brain, and whatever the name we use for that, who didn't allow us to finish the conversation. So I hope in the year 2013, everything would be done to just let dead people watch TV, not mess up with a radio. I started discussion with John about what Leonard's system, which actually is how to make a three-phase out of two-phase. You need to learn anything that is a three-phase, now you have a problem, because the grid is giving you only 220. Let me up. And I ask John, since we know that a motor is basically the phase converter, motor phase converter is basically a rotating transformer. How about if we do it this way? A transformer that is not rotating is giving a three phase. So my question to you, Dick, would be, although a very easy, economical, and uneconomical sort of a way of doing three phases is the rotary phase, and John is absolutely good in it. Absolutely guru in it. Three-phase converter. There is a system based on the transformer, and that system was actually found, I believe, in 1860. And that system works still today and gives you three-phase out of transformers. Dick, back to you.
We got to be very careful with our wording here, Wes. For the people in most of Nassau and all of Suffolk, where there's three wires coming from the pole pick transformer into your house, after they enter your fuse panel or your circuit breaker panel, one big fat wire is black, one big fat wire is red, and the third wire is ground. And there are lots of people who call the red wire phase A and the black wire phase B, or vice versa. And they think they've got two phases. No. They've got one phase. They got a secondary winding on that power transformer where the center tap is grounded. And you've got the positive voltage on the red one and negative voltage on the black one at one instant of time. But it's really one phase. And to convert that into three phases is difficult. Now, certain portions of... Let me drop... Certain portions of New York City being fed by Con Ed, where Rich is living, N2EO, for instance, he really does have two independent phases of a Y-wired system, where his red wire and his black wire are not 180 degrees out of phase. And you can look at that with an oscilloscope. Look at the two wires on an oscilloscope, on a dual-trace oscilloscope, and you'll see that they're exactly out of phase with each other in my house. You do that in Rich's house, and you'll find that they're 120 degrees apart, not 180 degrees. He really does have two phases of a three-phase system. And I think very few private homes are allowed to have three-phase wiring going into them, because that's the kind of wiring required for an industrial environment. To take the real two phases you've got in some Con Ed houses, or to take the one phase with two polarities that I've got in my house on Long Island and to convert it into high quality three phase, you now got to be a little bit careful as to how you do that. Rotary machinery is one beautiful way. They can do it very well. Although, you may end up with a rotary machine where the motor is a squirrel cage motor. Let me drop. Where the squirrel cage motor is running at 1750 RPM, not 1800. And the secondary winding on that motor, the generator side, is a three-phase winding, but it's now going to be running at 55 hertz instead of 60 hertz, and some machinery you send that to might be unhappy. So a rotary motor generator set is one very good way of getting three phases. There are kinds of electronic inverters that can give you three phases, but to get three phases of high-quality sine wave on each of the three phases, that's a pretty heavy, pretty expensive piece of electronics. To take the one phase that I've got and to generate the two missing phases and to do it for various amounts of load, a changing load, very difficult. If I was doing it for a traveling wave tube amplifier, the way they work is that they have the three phases coming in, and the three phases have to be extremely well balanced in amplitude and phase. You want the three phases to be 120 degrees apart, plus or minus 1 degree or so, and the three phases to be the exact same voltage, plus or minus 1 volt, because what that power supply is doing, let me drop, the traveling wave tube power supply is running that three-phase voltage that you're supplying the machine. It's putting it to two separate transformers simultaneously inside that box. One of them is Y-wired, one of them is Delta-wired. And there's another 60 degrees of phase shift between those two. And you got full wave rectifier on the output of those two separate power transformers, Y and Delta. And the net equivalent you get is either 12 cycles of rectification coming out. As such, the rectified output voltage is so smooth, it almost needs no filtering. And when you're feeding the 5,000 volts into the cathode of a traveling wave tube, and you want the 5 volts to be regulated to the nearest 1 volt, so you're not creating residual phase modulation within the traveling wave tube itself. The traveling wave tube is giving you 30 some odd decibels of gain, and giving you a couple of hundred watts of output, but if it's simultaneously giving you 60 cycles times 12 is what? 700 cycles of ripple of a couple of volts on the cathode, and therefore you're getting FM modulation at 720 hertz coming out of your RF amplifier. In some circumstances, that's going to make you very unhappy. So that particular environment requires extremely high accuracy, amplitude, and phase of the three phases. To generate that in your house, when you've only got, in my case, one phase but two polarities coming in, I've studied that. It is so damn difficult that what I would probably have to do is completely redesign that power supply to run on my one-phase power, 240 volts, and have a huge filter capacitor and electronic regulation in there to get the 1 volt of regulation I need at 5,000 volts to properly feed that tube. I'm going to triple the size of the power supply in that traveling wave tube amplifier in order to make it work for my particular environment because I don't have access to high...
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Yeah, but Dick, you have only two transformers. You want to make three-phase. How would you do it?
If I said you can't do it, I'd be close. In your case, by Con Ed, you might really have two of the three phases come into your house. And by putting a dual trace oscilloscope on your black wire and your red wire that comes into your house, you can find out, do they differ by 180 degrees or 120 degrees? If it's 120 degrees, you've got two of the three phases. To generate the third phase, you'll be amazed how difficult it is to do without rotary machinery. And that rotary machinery better have a synchronous AC motor so that the motor turns at exactly 60 hertz. Otherwise, you're going to be generating 55 hertz of three phase. So just using a motor generator is not the answer. Over to you, LS, N2XJN. Wait for the beeps, K2LIW.
N2XJN. Does anybody on this repeater know how to make three phases out of two transformers? N2XJN.
Yes.
this discussion with Eric earlier, and his answer was you go out and spend a whole lot of money. John, how would you do it? KC2WGB, K2RIW.
KC2WGB. Dick, it can be done with a thing they call teaser transformer. You will have two transformers hooked up to two-phase wiring, and you can develop three-phase. Absolutely.
And also, there is another... I wonder if Glenn is with us. Glenn, are you with us?
Yeah,
John, when you say two phases, do you really have ConEd two phases of 120 volts in your house? And Eric, what is the easiest way to do this? KE2EJ, K2RIW?
Well, the way I do it, for my stuff, I actually have units that do it for 125 kVA. I've got units that do it at 5 kVA. What you do is you turn the AC into DC, and then make three phases of AC. Pretty simple. You can have it crystal locked to whatever frequency you want.
And then, however, what's the approximate price of that machinery that does that for you, Eric? I am guessing that that machine, at your KVAs, you're way beyond the number of dollars that we're willing to spend. And as such, I don't think... Now, Phyllis, for my private house, how many dollars would I have to spend in my private house to do that, Eric? KE2EJ, K2LAW?
So, in your private house, what do you need to run on three-phase? A motor? You know? How many kilowatts of power do you need?
Excellent.
The 5 kVA units, you can buy them from, they start around $2,200, depending upon the model, it goes up to maybe $4,000 or $5,000. It's really not that bad if you have a need for it, but being a private homeowner, what the heck do you need three phases for?
Let me interrupt you, guys.
I explained that earlier. I've got a 1,000-watt output capability, traveling wave tube, capable of 1,000 watts at X-band. Ham radio-wise, that would make me the king of the mountain. The highest power guy you've got on 10 gigs these days is running 50 watts. And if I could run 1,000 watts into a good antenna, oh boy, would I be king of the mountain. But that traveling wave tube at 1,000 watts probably draws 4,000 watts of very high-quality three-phase. If I don't redesign the living daylights out of that thing, it wants three phases with each of the phases to the nearest 1 degree in 120-degree accuracy and the nearest 1 or 2 volts of 120-volts accuracy on each one of the three phases to properly operate that Y-delta power supply system that's in there to give you low ripple on the cathode of that tube at 5 or 10,000 volts. So I need quite a few kilovolts of it with high quality. You just told me it's going to take me $2,500 to do that. That's approximately the price of what I think on the surplus market my traveling wave tube is worth. So just to feed my traveling wave tube, you're telling me I've got to double the price of the network. Hey, I'm possibly willing to do that. I've now got to decide, am I enthusiastic enough? Am I reading you right on this one, Eric? KE2EJ, K2LIW?
$860 for 10 kilowatts.
Actually, you are. And the other thing is, I say to you, you know, you're maybe thinking 10 or 20 years ago, and then I can sell you for the price of the power supply and your used traveling wave tube, solid-state amplifier to push out 300 watts at 12 gig if you want it. Actually, there's some transistors now that put out 100 watts a piece that are not all that expensive, but you have to design the circuitry that goes around it.
Yeah, but 100 watts, sorry, you said 300 watts at 10 gigs. Aren't you describing a $2,000 solid-state amplifier?
It's a little bit more than that, but yeah, 300 watts, just the amplifier. You have to supply the drive.
Okay, now, Wes does think he found a brand name that's $800. The fact that the manufacturer claims he's got the right number of kilowatts of capability, kilovolt amperes, of three-phase. Is he really meeting the phase accuracy requirement and the amplitude accuracy requirement and doing all of that for $800? What's your guess on that one, Eric? KE2EJ, K2LAW? I'm skeptical.
I think it was $2,250 There's a 5 kVA, a little under 5 kilowatts. It's actually as they state that its accuracy is NIST traceable. In terms of regulation, as long as you stay within the limits of the supply, they guarantee a very, very stable output. And I mean very stable. If we go to the big ones, like the, say, the 125 kVA, which is made by a company in California called MGE, we run our entire station on it. So it's got to be good. And I don't like putting motors on it, but we do.
When you put motors, you're talking about a blower motor for cooling of your main tube? And at your kVA, aren't you talking about a 50 grand power supply? And you're saying it's got the accuracy required. But still, a little bit pricey for my application. I think rather than spend $2,500 or so for the three-phase power supply, I might be way ahead of the game to redesign the power supply myself and make it run on one phase. And I presume this 5 kVA thing that you're describing for $2,500, I presume it's running on single-phase 240 volts, 20 amperes of it. Is that true, Eric? Go ahead.
5, 10 kilowatts at home for 860.
Actually, you can get it at, what is it, 30 amps at 120. I think it's like 18 amps at 240, something like that. Very stable. But look, you can order one and have it tomorrow. You don't have to wait a year while you build the other one.
Yeah, I'm at a decision point, is what you're saying. I either write a check to make the problem go away and find a great big chunk. Oh, by the way, how heavy and how voluminous is this 5 kVA thing that you're describing, Eric? Go ahead.
Not that big. It's really heavy because it has a nice output transformer. And the output distortion is very, very, very low. So it's like what you get from the power company.
Okay, so it's got three phases of rather pure sine wave coming out. It's about to go into a Y-delta full-wave rectifier. As such, all the peaks of those sine waves are going to be loaded, and the valleys are not going to be loaded. You sure that the 5 kVA is going to be happy with that, or with you, Eric?
Well, when I had my analog transmitter, okay, my high voltage supplies are three-phase. They have to be three-phase. Okay, the regulations for the supply is based on the AC fed into the transformer. You know, these were the big transformers that were outside that had all the diodes dumped in oil. And I used in the city, because we had to do some kinds of backup, we used three of those things, one on each one of those high voltage transformers. It works like a champ.
Yeah, because most broadcast transmitters have the rectifier network on the power supply, which is choke input type, and therefore it draws almost the same current as if it had a pure resistive load across the whole 360 degrees of each one of those sine waves. This particular power supply of mine doesn't have choke input. It's as bad as the computer networks, which do pure rectification of the peaks. I guarantee that my load is going to make a hell of a lot of harmonic energy, and I think your 5 kVA could be made a little bit unhappy by that. Well, you did say it's got a pretty big three-phase output iron transformer making a very pure sine wave. So maybe the flywheel action of that transformer will smooth all this out, and maybe I don't have to convert it to a choke input power supply. KE2EJ, K2LIW.
Make a comment.
K2RW, KE2EJ. Well, I have another suggestion for you. I don't know if you're aware that most of the ENG trucks now have gone digital. Most of them now have all solid-state amplifiers. And a lot of the older TWT power supplies run off at 12 volts. A lot of amps, but, you know, maybe you can get your hands on one of those. I've seen them on eBay. I've seen them in a few places.
Okay, now you're talking. Let me drop. A KU band uplink made for 15, 16 gigahertz. I'm willing to do the conversion of that traveling wave tube, if it is a TWT, to make it run on 10 gigs. And if it's got a power supply that runs on 12 volts at a zillion amperes, I wish it was 24 or 48, that's a beautiful solution. Are those being scrapped from the ENG trucks because they're going over to solid state? And do you have contacts that could possibly spirit me one of those, Eric, for a fee? K2EJ, K2LAW?
I think I have an answer for your questions, but you're not allowing me to talk.
I know. I want this information from Eric first. Go ahead, Eric.
It's kind of late. Everybody's already made the conversion, so I don't know what's left. A lot of them wound up in the garbage. There were a couple of microwave companies, a guy up in Massachusetts and another guy in California that was buying them up from people for literally a dollar a pound. There may still be a few out there. Everybody got rid of TWTs. Everybody's solid state these days. The gain on the satellites have gotten better, so you don't need quite nearly as much power. But if you fish around and dig around, it's possible. If you go to one of these guys that did all the buying up, they're selling them for a pretty penny because, their aim is to make money.
You're saying these things are being sold for 50 cents a pound, starting how many years ago? And is there a chance that some of these ENG trucks are still being converted and there's some still left there? Eric, what's your guess?
Yeah, well, a lot of these guys, the little guys, fancy pop, and some of the guys that actually converted their exciters to digital and continue to use the same amplifiers. But they're all reaching the end of life, and they're going to have to change soon. So there's probably another way. I don't know if you're aware that when Nextel, Sprint, bought up some bandwidth from what was known as the Cars Band. That was the time that, everybody had to throw out the 2 and 7 gear stuff and put in the new stuff, which is all digital and much narrower bandwidth and a little bit lower power. They were dumping their high-end KU stuff and, when they were doing upgrades to their truck, they did the whole thing, not just a little part of it.
For a solid-state amplifier, the ones running on KU band that I've seen tend to be extremely narrowband by comparison to TWT. A properly fed TWT is capable of almost a full octave of instantaneous bandwidth. And to get a few percent of bandwidth out of these high-power solid-state things with a zillion hybrid dividers and a bunch of hybrid combiners on a zillion individual amplifiers to make that all balanced and properly protected and whatever, it's a big deal. And the field effect transistors that give you any significant power at 16 gigs, they want to be fed 9.9 volts maximum, otherwise they go west real fast. So to develop that amount of power at 9 volts, well regulated, wow, is that a task. Are you sure that this is the right way to go? Are these people prematurely, just because they fell in love with solid state and they're giving up tubes, and a properly fed tube will outlive you and I, the so-called end of life, if it's being treated correctly, almost doesn't exist, Eric. I mean, that traveling wave tube that's in the Voyager spacecraft, 30-some-odd years later, is still clanking. KE2EJ, K2LAW.
K2LAW, K2EJ. Well, you got to remember that in an ENG truck, it's not sitting on springs to begin with. Also, you're talking about, in the old days, 32 megahertz worth of bandwidth. Really beating on the cathode of that tube. What's in the Voyager is one thing, and it's just pretty narrow band in terms of what it has to develop. And as you must know, for every satellite transponder that uses TWTs, there's a spare because some of them don't make it past launch.
I accept that. Early wear out problems, but you said you're really asking for a lot of that cathode. If that cathode is properly designed, he's creating a beam and none of the signal goes to that cathode. Just pure B+. The real signal is going to the input end of the helix, and the output end of the helix is where the great big signal comes out of. So that cathode, properly designed, he's sitting there idling. He's got a whole lot of area with a parabolic shape. He's launching all those electrons all of that lensing network beyond the cathode, eventually converts that into a nice periodic permanent magnet focused beam. So that tube that's on the Voyager spacecraft, he thinks he's idling, as I see it, Eric. You properly design the tube, it can have a hell of a lot of life if you treat it correctly. And yes, if you got a lot of junk jumping around, bouncing around inside the tube, and you give it to a whole lot of vibration, and you start making control grid the cathode shorts, of course life can get complicated. KE2EJ, K2LAW.
And 2G.
I was waiting for the beep.
K2LAW, K2EJ. Yes, all of that is true. I don't remember, it's been so many years since I've had a TWT amplifier. I don't remember what the beam kind on those things was. I know what they are on the IOTs. Took them half an amp. But that's just idling. And that's just 28,000 volts. But by the way, the transistors they use today, they don't run on 9 volts. They run on 50 volts. Well, at least the ones that I've seen. Very nice design. Very compact. Boxes. Actually, there's a company in Hoffman that makes them. I can't think of the name of it right now. There's a few companies that make them, and they also make them for the military. And pretty compact boxes. They make them in 100 watt size. They make them in a 300 watt size. Although I've never seen a 500 watt unit. Where I've seen 500 watt TWTs.
Beam currents run numbers like 30 milliamps up to 300 milliamps of beam current. Rarely does a TWT, at the kind of power levels you and I are talking about, go beyond 300 milliamps. But to make 300 milliamps, there's a certain number of square centimeters the cathode takes to do that. It's a great big parabolically shaped thing with an even heater, and that's not too difficult to make a high-quality cathode. I will admit to properly shape the control grid that's in front of it. There was a woman who did that for us on the tubes that we were buying for our military program, who had a particular curvature to her thumb when she was forming that gun assembly of the tube. And when she retired, the yield of that product from the Varian company, I think it was. No, it wasn't Varian. I'm having trouble thinking the name of the company on the West Coast, Northern West Coast. Their yield went down to very small numbers until they hired her back. N2XJN, K2RIW, go ahead, Wes.
N2XJN, a few answers. If you want to have a cheap way, go with rotary. I have at home 10 kilowatts, and it's rotary. That's one of the devices that I have. Works like a charm. Three phases. The one of the systems that we were discussing with John was Word Learner system, Word explanation. John is absolutely a guru in this stuff. Now, if you want to go solid stage or no beam moving part, a standard SCOTT, S-C-O-T-T system, it works. We assume that the desired voltage is the same on two or three phases. Size, the SCOTT transformer connection is actually made of the center tap one-to-one ratio, main transformer, let's say T1, and the second transformer, T2. The center tap side of the T1 is connected between two of the phases on the three phases side. And its center tap then connects to one end of the lower turn count side of T2. Then the other end connects to the remaining phase. So the other side of the transformer then connects directly to the two pairs of the two phase four wire systems. Now, if you want to wind it by yourself, I have a coil winders. How much is it going to cost you? The cost of the wire and the core. This would be even cheaper, and it's going to be no moving parts. Now, as far as the DC, you said you want to have a DC at higher voltage, and the current, let me jump. I have two devices that I have acquired. both of them very inexpensive. One is $150, and the other one is $150. Now, this thing is supposed to run about 6-7 kilowatts hour, so it's not bad. In some instances, you can have a 110 volt, 200 amps, if you want to. This thing doesn't have anything inside. You open the box, all you see is either if it's based on SSR, solid state relay, or it's based on SCR, solid rectifier. I don't know how to say it. Say solid SCR. And then, in the middle of the legs, so you have a full legs of the grass bridge. And this thing was made primarily for the motors. So you have a armature voltage and then you have a fuel voltage. The armature voltage usually is not less than 40 amps up to 200 amps in most of this stuff, and it's a small plastic enclosure. This thing is light, nothing heavy in it. And then the field is usually 200-240 volts and 1 amp. So you have something like a grid bridge, but then you have a middle leg in it. That's for SCR. And that thing is connected to the electronic board, which actually gives the peaks, like a pulse width modulation peaks on the amplitude when it vibrates up on the positive and on the and it, negative. That's how this thing makes the voltage. So if you want to have a high current and the high voltage, this thing would be good for you. Enter it here.
So your rotary converter that makes three-phase power, if the motor is a squirrel cage motor running at 1750 RPM instead of 1800, because it's got to have a certain slip rate, if it's not a synchronous motor, it means that you're generating three-phase sine wave output, but you're doing it at 58 hertz, not 60 hertz. Is that true? Over to you, Wes, K2LAW.
I would love John to say, because we have a few minutes, and John has the best possible ability to use English to explain. And he would do it in 10 times smaller periods of time. John?
I don't know what he wants me to explain, Dick, but he's talking about a drive that he purchased, which will operate a DC motor. That's the drive he was explaining. The Ward-Leonard system is a system that's built inside the lathe he bought, so I don't know what explanation he needs.
Okay, maybe what you're saying is that the DC motor has a servo mechanism, and the servo mechanism, I think you're saying, it knows how to speed up and slow down in order to make exactly 60 hertz. So it's got a servo mechanism comparing to a 60 hertz reference. It's not a square cage motor with 1750 RPM with a 50 hertz slip rate. Is that true, John? KC2WGB, K2RIW?
I think what he has in the lathe now, the Ward-Leonard system, consists of a motor generator setup with an exciter. Synchronous motor driving a DC armature, one shaft, and on top is mounted an exciter. The exciter generates the exciter voltage for the field for the generator, which also is applied to the DC motor, which drives the lathe, goes to that field. The output of the generator armature goes to the armature in the motor, and it goes through a rheostat. Ward-Leonard.
And you said the magic word, synchronous motor. And so you got a fancy starting circuit to get that synchronous motor up to speed. Once you got a synchronous motor, yes, now it can turn at exactly 1800 RPM. That's what I was asking earlier. Back to you, John.
Yeah, he has a variation on the Ward-Leonard system, which you know, good quality speed control, very veneer type of maneuvering, excellent machine. But he has a burnt stator in the synchronous motor, which he's trying to get repaired. He was thinking of replacing it with this drive. Makes it a little more complicated, and of course, butchers the unit, but he was just trying to get that to work. So that's what he's been working on. KC2 WGB.
And Johnny, earlier John, Wes was describing a circuit where he's telling me the way he's winding the transformers as a purely passive network that converts two phase into three phase. Does somebody have a scheme? I mean, for Wes to try to describe to me how all the wires of all these transformers are hooked up, there's no way in the world that I could picture that from that description. Is there a website that shows that circuit to your knowledge, John? KC2WGB, K2LAW?
First of all, Dick, he doesn't have two phase. He has single phase. You need four wire, two phase. So you have two wire systems. Then you can develop three phase with what they call the Scott transformation. And you use a teaser transformer. If you look those up, you'll see the circuit. It's very simple. It's done every day.
Okay, so the magic word is Scott transformation. And I think you said, along with the Scott transformation, there's something called a teaser transformer. Is that true? If I Google those words, Scott transformation and teaser transformer, I'll find it all?
You should. It should come right up, Dick.
Well, I guess that's what I'm looking for. And so you believe that'll create the right amount of amplitude balance and phase balance, and it won't be load sensitive? In other words, many of these circuits that passively generate another phase or two become very load sensitive. You change the load and the amplitude and or phase it generates starts changing. Over to you, John.
Dick, it is a very poor way to do it, but it is done by Edison all of the time. It depends on the load characteristics and your curve. You can either have 86% or you can use these transformers that are 5% tapped. Those you'll see when you look up the Scott transformation how that's involved. Yes, you can do it. Can you run machinery on it? Probably, but the stability I'm not sure of.
Okay, that's the information I'm looking for. Go ahead, Wes.
You can go to Wikipedia. You have a schematic in Wikipedia on Scott transformer. SCOTT-T transformer. That's how you should look and go a little bit lower through the page. You see exactly how the connection is being done. It was being used by Edison and by Tesla, and it works very good. You have a two-phase motor. You can do it, the unbalanced load as well if you want to. You can have back-to-back arrangement for the T-Scott transformer. There are so many options, and this thing works. So this is the concept of 1860 or 18... Hold on. I don't remember exactly, but early 1900, not even 1900. And it works like a charm. Enter again.
Dick, the reverse is usually used more common to create two phase from three phase, two independent phases.
Why would I want to make two phases out of three as opposed to just using two of the three phases? Over to you, John.
When you look at the diagram, you'll see if you have a three-phase system and you need independent two-phase, you can do it.
So, in other words, in order to keep Con Ed happy, I have to equally load the three phases. So this network you're describing will equally load three phases, even though I'm only using two of those phases and an output for running my particular machinery. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and everything will stay in balance, and you can have two independent, separate phases.
So that's a Scott transformer used backwards?
Correct. Scott transformation.
Also, a fascinating article, if you go to it, it's more to history, but it's exactly describing everything with two-phase and three-phase, somebody in two independent phases as well. All you got to do is go to www.3phasepower.org. That's it. www.3, which will be three, then phasepower.org. And the article is being called Two-Phase Power Systems. Enter it here.
Okay, threephasepower.org. Good to know. me down to about 3 minutes left. This was TechNet number 4131 of the series. That began, we think, in September of 1982, even though the numbers don't quite add up right. We must have missed a couple in there somewhere. I know we've had very few absentees that I know of per year. I wonder if that explanation of how a transformer works was at all helpful from your point of view, John. KC2WGB, K2LIW.
Oh, absolutely, Dick. It makes things a little clearer, and as Sher points out, to start with, when you mentioned that, you know, look at the primary first, make sure the primary is going to be able to handle the heat, the current, and is going to work. Yeah, I think that was a good recommendation, and good thing to follow.
Yeah, I never did get to my electronic puzzle, which was, I've had a failure of my handy-talky. I'll give you the clues. I'm listening to 146.85 with my handy-talky, and for the 15th time in the life of that handy-talky, I dropped it on the floor. Previously, it had been dropped from 100 feet of tower. Another time, it on the grass. Another time, it had been dropped from the 70-foot level of a tower onto macadam. That particular time, the battery got smashed. The PNT connector got bent. The rubber duck got smashed. But the radio kept working. So all of these drops, the radio kept working. All of a sudden, one simple drop in my bathroom, about a 3-foot drop onto the ceramic floor. All of a sudden, I'm listening to 8.5, and 8.5 ain't there. And I say, well, maybe 8.5 just went quiet. I'll transmit to him. And I transmit to him. The light comes on. The transmitter's on. No response. As you probably know, the light on a handy-talkie indicates that the phase lock loop circuit was satisfied. It did establish a reliable lock. Let me drop. And that lock, in turn, lights the light, the red light, when you're transmitting, and it enables the transmitter final stage. The way every one of these handy talkies are made, if you don't get a established phase lock and your voltage-controlled oscillator is squittering all over the place, the final stage of the transmitter is not enabled, and therefore you're not jamming everybody in the world by swishing all over the place. So the light was coming on, but it wasn't working. I did a whole bunch of tests, and I found out the megacycle, this has got a thumb wheel switch. It's got three thumb wheel switches. The megacycle knob was working like a charm. The 10 kilohertz knob was working like a charm. The 100 kilohertz knob had a crazy characteristic. If I dialed in 146.0, I got that frequency. 146.1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 146.7, no problem. Ask for 146.8, I got 146.0. Ask for 146.9, I got 146.1. With that as a clue, would you be able to figure out what the failure was? Over to you, John. K2LAW.
Is this one of those thumb wheels that is binary counting switches?
Give that man a cigar. Now, what do you think happened?
One of the intermediates.
Yeah.
Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, code number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, code number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.